The real people who run the city are here in our... I might as well say it. We don't, we, you know, the other people don't. All they do is make movies. Anyway. I'm going to get the reaction of the leaders of the council a little bit later about and wonder, is somebody going to do a movie about the members of the city county council and what they do and enter it into the Heartland Film Festival, because somebody's done what the mayor does in a day, entering it into the Heartland Film Festival. I can't wait to see this movie. I really can't. Anyway, it is Afternoons with Amos for Thursday, May the 31st. You got a question, a problem about your city, county government? You got a problem, maybe the trash isn't being picked up and collected, the bicycle lanes aren't being swept. You want to know, you know, is your taxes going up? Is it going down? Are city services going to get worse? When are they going to make sure the grass is cut and watered at the Douglas Park Golf Course? What are we going to do about TIF districts, which takes money away from our schools and our libraries on projects that don't bring jobs in our community? All those questions and more. The leadership of the Democratic members of the council are here. Nobody's making a movie about them because they're just here doing the work. The majority leader of the council, Vern Brown, is here. The vice president of the council, Brian Mayhern, is here. The president of the council, Maggie Lewis, is here. And oh, by the way, while we're on the air, it's Spelling Bee Day, by the way. No, the young lady from Indiana is still in the running through the fifth round of the Spelling Bee. And I think the first round just ended on ESPN, like 2 or ESPN something or other. And I guess it goes tonight. Is tonight the finals? Why don't we know this? Why didn't the Spelling Bee station send us an email? That's Channel 6, you know, because they're the Spelling Bee station. Anyway, we welcome the leadership of our city county council. Guys, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon. Let me first ask, there's a proposal that is, there's a couple proposals moving through the council. One is something that companies like Eli Lilly, Cummins, a lot of the... including Anthem, even this company, Radio One, provides as a potential benefit to employers. And that is what is called domestic partner benefits, which are for couples, either opposite-sex couples or same-sex couples, to get insurance coverages and benefits. You got to sign your life away. You got to sign more affidavits than the law allows in order to do that. It is moving through the council. Why is the council considering this proposal? What benefit does it have to not only city, county employees, but to the taxpayers of Indianapolis and Marion County?
Well, first of all, Councilor Mansfield and Councilor Adamsons are sponsors of this proposal. It is being introduced next Monday, June the 4th. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity for us to make sure that everyone in our communities have the same rights, the same benefits. You know, times are hard. Oftentimes, you do have people that are living together that shares the same bills, and this is another opportunity for them to come together and really take care of their families.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, you know, perceive that this is something for same-sex couples, but this is, you know, something that if Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt worked for city county government, they would be eligible for this, or Goldie Hawn and the guy he's been with forever, or if Stedman and Oprah worked for city county government, they would be eligible for this benefit.
Exactly. This is an opportunity for, once again, to take care of our families as a whole, and we don't define what a family is at this point. And so this is their chance to come together and ensure that their families actually do have health benefits and the same benefits that we all have.
Any estimates as to how many city county employees might take advantage of this? You know, I've talked to people in business, and it really isn't a lot of employees. That it's not like 10 or 20 or 30% of your workforce.
Right. At this point, we do not have that accurate data. We are doing a fiscal impact study and looking at other cities to see how many individuals actually take advantage of a proposal like this.
Speaking of money, here we are the end of May, 5 months into the year. If city county government was a private business, they would already have released to the owners of the business, the stockholders, how the business was doing in the first 3 months of the year. How much money did you take in? How much money did you spend? How much money you got left over? What are the balances and stuff in your account? What's the fiscal health? Here we are 5 months in the year. Have you all received, has the council received any kind of summary of how the city is doing financially, at least through the first 3 months of the year, Brian?
Amos, that we not only do not have an indication of where the city stands at the end of the first quarter of this year, we do not have a clear indication of where the city stands at the end of the year.
At the end of last year?
At the end of last year. We do not have what is mandated under the ordinance, a clear indication from the administration of where the city stands financially. If we were, as you said, a business, we would have filed our taxes by now, perhaps maybe with an extension. But I will tell you that even if the government didn't know where we stood as a business, as far as taxes, the board of directors of a company certainly would. We are approaching the budget season. We are needing to understand whether or not we have a public safety crisis or not with funding. And we do not have the data that we need from the administration to do our jobs as the fiscal agent for the county.
Theoretically, the administration, the mayor, and the city controller would be providing you all with their proposed 2013 budget somewhere between August 1st and August 10th. That's 63-65 days from now. So it's almost like, how can you present a budget and you haven't even closed out 20? You're saying you haven't even closed out 2011.
I don't think that there's a clear indication. No. I mean, we had the controller come to not one, but two, meetings of the Rule and Public Policy Committee, which mm-hmm. I chair, mm-hmm. Councilor Lewis and Councilor Brown are also members of. And on two different occasions, could not provide us with a very clear indication of where we stand financially. In fact, do not have yet a clear indication of what the reports on a month on the quarterly basis or even on a monthly basis should look like. A draft was brought. This is what it might look like.
A template.
Yeah,
a template.
You know, and so you know, clearly there is a need for this because we are not only approaching the budget season, but trying to understand if there are appropriations, if there's additional fiscals that the administration wants to do. We don't have a context. We can't lay that against a background and say this makes sense because we're doing well or we're not doing well in the areas in which we're not doing well. We don't want to micromanage.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you have to have the basic data to be able to understand the proposals that come before you on fiscals.
So you all don't even know if a city department is underspending its budget, which means there might be some extra money left over to cover shortfalls in another city department. So you guys are the fiscal agent. If there were monies that had to be moved from point A to point B, they have to come to the council and get at least 15 of you all to agree to do that, correct?
Yeah,
they just can't move money around on their own.
Not only to move it from one city agency to another, but to move it from one character to another.
So from one little line item.
Well, not individual line items, but groupings. So if there was extra money in capital expenses, but there was a need in personnel or vice versa, or to be able to move that within there, to be able to see what that is. Again, not micromanaging. These are broad characters, right. Five characters per agency and each agency, and in a review. Simply getting the report doesn't mean that we would go in and do appropriations, but or to micromanage. No, but we serve a vital oversight role, and you can't provide oversight if you can't see.
So is part of this that the council doesn't want to sit here in November and December having to plow through in the committee process and to vote on a bunch of fiscal ordinances moving money around to balance out the books when we ought to be knowing where we stand now?
Absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say exactly that. You know, we are the fiscal bodies. We have some specific things that we are required to do with those dollars, and we don't have that basic information. We have requested it several times and continue to not get the appropriate information. And at some point, we need that information so that we can do our jobs.
At the same time, the city is coming to the council and trying to get an expansion of the tax increment finance district. These are areas of the city where property tax money that would go to the city, that would go to IPS, that would go to different school districts, that would go to the library, that would go to Indigo, that would go to the township trustees, to the small claims courts, are diverted from those purposes to a special economic development purpose. One would be to try to put more development in. I don't know. There's no room to put any more development on Mass Avenue, but they want to put more development on Mass Avenue. It's also to put more development over on Indiana Avenue, over by the old Busch Stadium. How can the council justify increasing TIF districts, which would be reducing tax revenue to the city, if we don't know where we stand fiscally? Is that something where we say, okay, city, until we see a financial statement, we're not going to expand the TIFs?
Well, we're as you may know, and your listeners may know, we're in the process of not just the council, but a commission made up of county elected officials, state representative, the controller, the bond bank, trying to understand what TIF means. Mm-hmm. And your point here is even if you know what TIF means, and I think we're making some good progress in understanding this and being able to come up with some common sense recommendations at the end of next month. But even if you have that, you don't have the broader picture to see what are the costs, what are the budgetary constraints in which you're operating. So, right. we're doing what we can to learn about how TIF works and understand its importance as an economic development tool. But we certainly do need a broader picture of the whole city and county finances that we don't have today to match those things up.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon. So they missed the president, the vice president, and the majority leader of the city county council are here in the house. Maggie Lewis, Brian Mayhern, Vernon Brown. Vernon Brown, when you also talk about fiscal responsibility, the Indianapolis Star reported that there was a consulting contract entered into with the former public works director, David Sherman. He went to some company. That's fine. He retired from city and goes off to the private sector. Now the city is hiring him to come up with ways to save money on all kind of things like bike paths and whatever for $160,000. Does it raise questions that he would be advising the city on a lot of stuff that would fall under public works anyway?
That's a great question. I know a lot of people have that concern that know David Sherman's background. He's a very knowledgeable man in the Department of Public Works and those issues. He was a good director of Public Works, but him retiring from Public Works and then receiving a contract to do some of the same work that he was doing at twice the rate and half the time, you know, it calls in questions. I think he's making more in 7 months than he made in 2 years, you know, as the director of Public Works. If he was such a good person, we should have kept him. It was a bargain keeping him as the director, you know, so it may have been a reward. You know, sometimes they get people to leave their jobs and then give them a little reward on the side as compensation. But he is a knowledgeable guy, but it does call into question the cost of those expertise.
But there's also something, and correct me if I'm wrong, in city ordinance about ethics, that if you work for the city and you leave your job, you can't go become a high-paid consultant and come back and consult the city on the same things you're doing. The mayor's spokesperson, the communication director Mark Lauder, is quoted in Sunday's Indianapolis Star as saying Dave Sherman would be a consultant on, direct quote, infrastructure, neighborhood revitalization projects, parks, forestry, trails, bike lanes, curbs, and sidewalks, end of quote. Now, maybe the Star misquoted Mark Lauder, but every one of those descriptions falls under the purview of the Department of Public Works. Now, if it said that he was going to consult on fiscal matters and maybe help the city controller come up with a financial statement for the city, if he was going to consult and help the council on figuring out a way to redistrict the council, if he was going to consult the deputy mayor for education on how to improve education, those are things that had nothing to do with the Department of Public Works. But in just reading what the mayor's spokesperson said, it sounds like this is a violation of the ethics law of the city and county.
The violation of the ethics law that Mayor Ballard and Republican-led council passed and initiated. And not only that, the areas that you named were his direct responsibilities, as well as he was directly involved in the sale of our water to the gas company. And so there are all those projects and contracts for the streets and curbs and sidewalks he signed off on, and now he's consulting on those. So their excuse about he's doing some other consulting, that's fine. But those areas that you mentioned that was his that were his direct responsibilities, he should have no influence on whatsoever right now as a private consultant. And if he does, then the whole thing stinks.
Let me go to Mike at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing?
Fine.
For years and years and years, there's been mismanagement in the Indianapolis government, from the city county to the trustees to IPS. And the simple solution is that we're all getting ripped off. First, by the IPS, because they don't know how to manage their money. And of all the townships in Indianapolis, there's $58 million alone in their coffers by themselves. And that piece of stadium, that crap stadium they call Lucas Oil Stadium, that's a $1 billion mess. And there's too many people on the city council. And also the water sewer bill, where's all that money been going since 1977? Somebody doesn't seem to know this. And then IPS, because of that bullying incident, they went to a private organization outside to investigate. Another waste of money. There's so much waste of money going on in Fountain Square with those cultural trails. They've used old construction, put with new construction, and they've reduced the shortage of the length of lanes for people to drive through. There's so much mismanagement in this county, it's pathetic. I know, Amos, you've been here since like 75 when you first started the WTLC. I've been here my whole life. And I just watch mismanagement. Like the interstate they call the spaghetti ball, that was obsolete before it ever came online. Designed in the 50s and came online in 75. It's all backwards. They need somebody to step up and take over this whole city before it goes bankrupt. The infrastructure keeps falling in.
All right. Appreciate the comments. He made a point, though, and it was in this morning's Indianapolis Star, Erica Smith. How is it that they cannot finish the cultural trail in Fountain Square? If that were Mass Avenue, there'd have been a revolution by now. And is it something the council can do to demand? I mean, it's been going on 2 years now that the people in that area have been subjected to just total disrespect.
Yeah, I mean, the delays in the cultural trail are unfortunate. There are some explanations from the standpoint there were some things that were found. There was a late but eventual commitment to do the proper thing in terms of completing it down there with putting a head, if you will, on it, a gathering place. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake, the cultural trail in front of the Conrad was done in about 10 days. It's a great luxury hotel that we have downtown. But if the completion rate for the trail in Fountain Square had been twice as long as that, that might have been acceptable. But it's run quite lengthy.
Council President,
the last caller raised an issue about there's too many of us. There are 29 members of the City County Council, and it continues to come up that there's too many of us. A city our size do deserve full-time counselors, but that is nothing that we can do. Our state legislators need to take a look at that. I believe that we could, and I hope my colleagues don't get mad at me, I think we could cut the number of counselors down and make us full-time counselors, and then that way we don't have to worry about conflicts and who's working where, but that's a conversation for our state legislators.
Let me go back to the phones and Connie at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, this is Connie. What I want to ask is, why cannot Indigo get a shelter for each bus stop within Indianapolis? I mean, they need to have a bus stop so that if they want people to ride their buses, they need to keep them from getting wet and all that kind of stuff when it rains and stuff. Could you answer that question for me, please?
It's probably a question of money. She raises a good point. I think they try to add more shelters every year, Vernon Brown.
That's correct. Connie's exactly right. They try to add more shelters every year, but it's the issue of funding. And also, there's the catch-22. I live on the far east side on 21st Street. They're paving 21st Street right now from Post Road to Cumberland Road, and they're putting sidewalks in front of the school and in front of the apartment complexes. For years, people stood in the ditch and caught the bus in the rain and the snow. And now, once we have sidewalks, and they have to be handicap accessibles, and then Indigo could provide you a bus shelter if they have the funding, if they have the shelters available. But if you don't have a sidewalk and it's not handicap accessible, Indigo would not put a bus shelter in. So hopefully when my sidewalk project gets done on 21st Street in front of the apartment complex and then the school and the library, we'll actually get a couple of bus shelters on 21st Street.
Speaking of the Far East Side, these group of entrepreneurs that created a nonprofit to create bus service in the city of Lawrence. Are there less, if that works, are there lessons that perhaps the mass transit proponents can learn from? I mean, these are people that saw a need and went out here and found some dollars to help do that.
Yeah, and that's in the city of Lawrence. Yeah. And it's a shame that Indigo never got sufficient funding to actually do a good operation in Lawrence. Indigo has a limited service in Lawrence. I believe this new bus system, right, private people are going to shuttle people into the Indigo system. Mm-hmm. So hopefully if that proves to be financially feasible and makes a profit, then Indigo will eventually take over that service and then provide that service to funnel people into downtown from the city of Lawrence.
239-1310, 239-1310 is After News with Amos. What's the, other than the money, and obviously money and fiscal and really knowing what the financial condition of the city is, what's the other big issue facing this council, you know, as we're getting ready to go through the first half of this year?
Crime continues to be an issue that we are concerned about. Obviously, we have the appointment for the public safety director, and who is this individual that the mayor is looking at filling that spot. And so that's a priority for us to continue to look at ways to decrease crime in our neighborhoods. How do we work with the faith-based organizations, the task force, a variety of groups to decrease crime in our community?
As you all talk to your colleagues, what feedback are they getting from their constituents, from the people they represent, and particularly about concerns of ordinary police officers of this new, what do they call it, zone system, where you might be assigned to Mapleton Fall Creek, but you got to respond to a run almost out to Lawrence somewhere, almost out to Eagle Creek. And I think a lot of the line officers say, hey, we're supposed to be doing community policing. We're not supposed to be driving in a car. You're like we're on the Indianapolis 500.
A lot of my constituents are concerned about this. For example, I had a constituent call me 2 weeks ago. She was in an auto accident, and it took an hour and a half for an officer to come. That's ridiculous to me. And you know, obviously it's not because they didn't want to, but they had to come across town. There was no one close by. And so just the response times.
There's also this question of the public safety budget, the public safety deficit. And I'm not picking on the Indianapolis Fire Department because Vernon Brown happens to be there. But the other day I got an email from the fire department saying that instead of having one individual responsible for talking to the media of this city and communicating when our outstanding fire department goes out and responds to fires, they now have assigned three firefighters to do that job full time. And they kind of rotate them around. The Indianapolis Police Department has five sworn police officers as PR people. If I add up the salaries of those outstanding police officers and those outstanding firefighters, well-trained men and women, you could hire me, Chris, the intern, Matt Tully from The Star, and pick your favorite television reporter from television to do that job cheaper than those eight individuals. Is this another example of when we look at the public safety budget, what's bloating it isn't the cost of people protecting our streets or stopping fires. It's bureaucracy and money, you know, and putting people in jobs where you can get somebody to do it better for less.
And it's not only public safety.
And I'm not trying to pick on. I'm sure these people are great.
I know, but it's not only public safety. If you look at the number of PIOs, I think DPW has three PIOs. The Parks Department has PIOs. The mayor's office has four PIOs. I mean, it's all about spin and message for them, I guess, instead of actually product and services. So if we, that's something we need to look at during budget time, the number of PIOs we have. If we could do it better, you know, I mean, as when police officers and firefighters do it, they speak on the issues based on their experience, yes, and not from their writing experience or their experience as being public speakers. So they speak on from their job experience, which adds some credibility to their presentation. But also, they're, like I said, I don't know why the mayor has four PIOs. Mm-hmm. I don't know why DPW has three PIOs. I don't know what happens when you pick up your trash. It's so important that I have to have a news person to tell me about it.
Oh, I think it's to explain to people that they're having a seminars to learn about bike trails, but they're from 4 to 6 in the afternoon when people are still at work and not convenient. Let me go to Concerned Citizen at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Miss.
Yes.
Got a question for you.
Yes.
Hey, who owns the police cars that the policemen drive in?
Are you a taxpayer?
Yes, sir.
You do.
Who owns their uniforms that they wear?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they do because they pay for the uniforms. Is that
what about the equipment that they use? The guns, the handcuffs, the badges, the shoes, and things like that.
And maybe not the shoes, but I think the badges, the gun, the weapon, and that's ours.
Right.
And the car.
The car's ours. The gun's ours. Almost everything the police officer or firefighter uses on duty belongs to the city. The city purchases that and issues it to the officer or the firefighter.
Really?
So it comes out of taxpayer money.
We're not talking about firefighters. We're talking about police officers.
Well, it's the same for both. I mean, so, yeah, police officers.
Yeah, but this is okay. To my point.
Okay.
What about the gas in the police cars?
You pay for that.
Okay. So if I've got a police officer that's off duty and he's at PNC Bank with his car running on the Internet, full uniform, in a police car, and he's getting paid $15 to $20 an hour as a part-time job protecting that bank in the city's car, taxpayer's car, using the city's gas, taxpayer's gas, using those equipment that's on his body, which is a taxpayer's body. Does the city get reimbursed for that?
Not 1 cent. And actually, okay. They're getting paid $25 to $35 an hour. Not you, okay. You lowball. Okay. They get paid $35 an hour.
Okay, so now, when he gets paid that part-time money,
yeah.
Who keeps a record of that? Most of the time, those police officers get paid in cash. Do they report that as income? Does the city get a cut of that? That's my property.
You're correct on all of those points, sir. And for the last 5 years, we've been trying to get some kind of compensation or some kind of reimbursement back from the officers, and the mayor's refused to budge in that. Also, the FOP union has been adamant about not doing anything, even though they say publicly, we want to pay something for gas because gas is $4 a gallon. Behind the scenes, they fight tooth and nail not to pay any kind of compensation back. And it's even worse than you think. If a police officer wrecks his car while he's working his part-time job, he'll get on the radio call, and they'll bring him another car that you pay for.
Budget money? What about all that money? All the gas that they use? 90%, and I have nothing against a police officer, okay? If he chooses that as his career, that's fine. But part-time gig, I don't pay for that. A firefighter can't go and use a fire truck to protect a personal fire. Right. A guy that picks up trash in a city trash truck
can't
on his day off use a trash truck to go around to the neighborhoods and pick up trash as a part-time job, can he?
You're right about that.
Because his job is to pick up trash, and he uses a city truck, so why can't on his day off use that truck and go pick up trash and make money on
the side? Wait a minute. Don't we have an ordinance that says if gasoline is above a certain amount in the gallon, we're supposed to be reimbursed by the officers, and the mayor has drug his feet on enforcing a legal ordinance.
Right, that ordinance was passed 3 years ago.
Okay, now, again, I have nothing against the police officer trying to make some extra cash, okay? I have nothing against them putting their life on the line for me every day. However, for when I'm paying for his gas and I see a police car sitting in front of every bank, every Walmart, every Menards, every sporting event, every part-time get-together at a park or any place,
they everywhere.
That has nothing to do with the city of Indianapolis and it has nothing to do with him being on the clock, do we get a piece of that money?
No, sir. And we're working on the issue. Let me assure you that. We had a meeting for Public Works where the lady from Corporation Council came and talked about the policy and the difficulties enforcing the policy in her legal opinion. And then we had a follow-up meeting with Director Lori Miser from DPW and City Legal to discuss the issue further. So we've been working on this issue for 4 years, trying to get some kind of compensation or reimbursement for taxpayers' responsibility and liability for part-time work. And like you said, we love police officers. We want them to make some money part-time if they need it. And we want to be protected by the police officers. But the city deserves some kind of compensation.
And I don't want to put words in the FOP's mouth, but I thought at some point in part of their recommendations for how to solve the budget crisis, they were looking at perhaps that organizers of special events that hire, you know, the way police officers would be needed and what have you, and over time, that those organizers ought to reimburse the city. And I think that was the first time I'd ever heard the R word, reimbursement, coming from the FOP. So maybe there's some change in their thinking as well.
Right. That came from the FOP. They want to charge Black Expo. That's the FOP's philosophy. You know what I mean? And so.
Good. And I want to charge the motorcycle racers that come in here and the NASCAR people and the 500, but, you know, a whole lot of other
that
people.
That still doesn't resolve the issue about the day-to-day part-time jobs that they do every day.
All right. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Athens News. Name is. We're with the leadership of the City County Council. They are in the House. Tomorrow, we will be live from Flanner House Charter School. Now, Council President, Vice President, Majority Leader, remember the Flanner House Charter School was last in iRead for third graders in their scores. Those same third graders in iStep, English and Language Arts, 89% of them passed.
That's excellent.
So we're going to be at Flanner House tomorrow to try to find out what happened. How, you know, what's the morale? What was the morale when the school's third graders were said they were the worst in town? What's their morale now when they're saying they're the best in town? We even asked the charter school office to come and respond, because the charter school office was ready to throw Flanner House Charter School under the bus. All that and more. So we'll be at Flanner House Charter School, one of the oldest charter schools here in the city, one of the first to be named. This afternoon's with Amos after these. Back to the phones, and Denise. Hi there. Denise?
Dennis.
Dennis?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at it. They had an extra, they had an E on the end of Dennis. Hi, what's up?
Well, I've been traveling for the last couple of days, and you may have already covered this. But I'm curious as to, it appears to me that the three highest ranking African American employees at the airport have, in the last couple of months, been terminated. And I just wanted to see what the reaction might be of your guests today and you, and I'll take your response off the air.
I knew of two of them. Obviously, the director, John Clark, who, you know, the city's attitude was, we're shocked he spends money. Well, they knew that when they hired him. The second was Patzetta Trice, who was at the airport before John Clark ever came. She's been there since 2005. Those are the only two I know of. You know of a third?
Well, I thought it was the chief information officer, and I could be wrong.
No, that was Patzetta Trice.
I thought she was the chief communication
she
officer.
She was. If there was a third one, that one I'm not familiar with.
I could be wrong.
Okay.
I'm just curious.
All right. I'm disturbed about the Patzetta Trice, because it made no sense. Her and the other two individuals, their salaries, even at the most optimistic, have nothing to do with, what are they talking about, a deficit at the airport of what, $5-7 million, I think the city has talked about. I'm also concerned with the chair of the board taking personnel actions and being quoted about personnel actions, when that should be the person running the airport, not the board. Council President?
I was very surprised about the removing of Ms. Patzetta Trice. I'm more concerned now that one of our municipal corporations, the top administration, does not reflect the city that we live in. It's ridiculous that we do not have minorities in top positions over there. And so I am concerned about that. And then also I'm concerned that I knew that the past administration was working really hard to ensure that minority participation was key. It was important to them. And so will this new administration make that a priority as well?
Has the chair of the airport board sat down and met with you to introduce himself?
We have not done that. I am actually working with our appointment, David Lewis, to ensure that that happens really soon.
All right, back to the phones. Thank you, Dennis. Back to the phones. And Tom, hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Hey, I kind of feel sorry for them because people are going to put the blame on them. But like the last man said, this corruption in the city has been going on for years and years. You know, we build big, fancy domes and stuff, and who's getting ripped is the taxpayer. And you know, on Saturday I listened to the mayor, and then I listened to them. It's like a chess game. Everybody blaming each other, and I like I said, I don't blame them, because I feel there's nothing they can really do about the situation. But nothing's getting done. And as a younger person, we are responsible for older people's mistakes, especially in the city. We have to pay these taxes. And I told my wife, we getting up out of here, because this city is a mess, and the infrastructure is crumbling. And why is it when you go down Lafayette Road and 52nd Street, you got bike trails in the middle of the street? It's ridiculous. What's going on in the city? I take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Well, that's disappointing that you've lost faith in the city, and sounds like you've lost faith in the leadership of the city. And you know, We are trying. I can tell you that Maggie Vernon and I are trying to do, along with members of our caucus and I think thoughtful members of the opposition party, if you will, are trying to work to solve the problems that are facing us. I think that's why we are doing the TIF commission, not to blame anybody, try to find out how things work and come up with some suggestions on how we might do it better. You know, as far as the past practices, absolutely. I mean, when we demolished the Hoosier Dome that later became the RCA Dome, and almost the same amount of money that it cost to build was still due, you know, that's not a good sign. And going forward, we're trying to provide that kind of oversight, not arguing, not fighting, but providing honest and appropriate oversight to hold people accountable, to have them explain why something makes sense and to have them reconsider things that don't make sense.
I appreciate the call. Speaking of expenses and what have you, the fact that last weekend, the 11th largest city in the country, most of the public swimming pools paid for by the taxpayers were not open. And the reason given was, well, the lifeguards are from IPS and they're still in school. Does that wash with any of you? Should we be concerned that the city, the Parks Department, had no plan to at least make sure that pools would at least be open the first weekends of summer, and then once all the schools were out, then during the day as well?
Amos, you know, I've sat on the Parks Committee for several years, and since Parks is underfunded, they have a new management team, have a brand new director of Parks, which we just passed out. I don't think we voted on the full council meeting until the 4th. He came from DPW with absolutely no parks experience. The last parks director came from the state with absolutely no parks experience. So there's some issues there with parks and the administration of parks. Hopefully that gets better as time goes on and the new director gets more experience and gets on top of the issues. But they're underfunded, they're understaffed, and they have a lack of experience in the leadership roles.
Speaking of something tangential to parks, it is the 31st day of May. Somebody called this program last Friday and wanted to know where the community crime prevention grants were, when were they going to be awarded, to send a note to Cindy Porteous, who is the head of the Indianapolis Parks Foundation, asking. She said, well, we're completing the grants, and we're going to give the funding out in the middle of June, and that means summer's almost over with. What happened here?
It was simply, we didn't get the information in a timely manner.
From the administration.
From the administration. We have it now. It passed out of committee, and we'll take a vote on it on June 4th.
This is to appropriate the dollars.
Exactly.
But not to the individual grantees.
There was conversation about changing the process, and we as leadership did not want to go back and change the process. We want to remove those grants completely out of the council. Once we appropriate the dollars, we want to leave it to the board to decide which agency will receive those dollars.
Mm-hmm. So the council really want, from the sense of the council, is to not
politicize
exactly. It or pick it.
Exactly.
But people wanted to bring it back into the political arena?
Right.
Exactly.
Is it something that the whole concept needs to be looked at, because the concept has gotten political? Those who don't get the grants, they get mad and they go running to their member of the council, or they go running to the mayor's office. And have we created a Frankensteinian funding monster?
I don't think so. I think what we did a couple years ago when we removed it from the council and gave appropriated the dollars to the Parks Foundation, I think that was the best thing that we could do, so that individual counselors could not be lobbied to support a specific agency. And so I think what we did, we got it right.
239-1310, 239-1310. Zaps News. Name is back to the phones. Reverend Ajabu, hi there.
Hey, Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine.
And City County Council people, Maggie. And,
hey, Reverend.
Those that are up under you. My comments are along the lines of your previous caller before me, Tom. I am very concerned about the corruption that looks like it's running rampant within the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. I'm sure you read the editorial this morning in the Star concerning the vial of Sarge Blood. Not only has it been moved, but it's been opened. Mm-hmm. And it appears that nobody is losing their job. I mean, you've you ran Straub out, who was trying to straighten it up. But Sizelski, who is directly responsible for that, instead of him being fired, he was given another job. What's the woman's name, Sella or whatever it is, who actually authorized and walked the vow to be moved, is still on the force. All of the officers involved still on the force. I met with Prosecutor Curry, and he says he's not going to charge the officers that beat Brandon Johnson. I mean, what do police have to do in order for the law to apply to them like it applies to regular citizens? It just seems like that the police got a I'm not going to go to jail free card. What is – can y'all help me?
Well, I will say that the single greatest tool that the police have in our community – is the public confidence. It's not a badge. It's not a gun. It's not the threat of force. It's the public confidence. So that the vast, 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 vast majority of the population does not break the law and leaves what is going to be a limited police force of maybe 16, 17, 1800 people to police a population that approaches a million. And we do have a crisis in public confidence within our police department. The administration has turned us back on virtually every front in which we have attempted to try to instill a greater amount of public confidence. Councilor Brown worked as hard as any councilor has ever worked to try to modify the merit board so as to have it more reflective of the community, so as to, the public to know that when you're dealing with a police officer and they don't deal with you appropriately, they will face the music. And we have been turned back on that, and we've been turned back on other initiatives, too, that are so important to making sure that the public has its confidence in the police department. And we won't stop until we can get that accomplished. But, you know, the first step in solving a problem is acknowledging it, and the administration refuses to acknowledge that.
The other thing is the mayor's statement the other day when this was brought up, the fact that Prosecutor Curry sent a very strongly worded letter to the mayor when he found out that there had been additional tampering on the Bizarre evidence, and he had not been notified as the prosecutor who is responsible for the custody of that evidence. The mayor kind of played off the prosecutor's concern, saying, well, this is not an important thing. This is nothing to be upset about. Is it that the mayor, honest to God, does not get this? If evidence is supposed to be protected and police officers can go and touch that evidence and the prosecutor doesn't know it, that the paperwork is not there, how does the mayor not understand that's serious business? Somebody could go to jail. Oh, that's obstruction.
Wild. I mean, let's remember one of the very first acts of this mayor was to take control of IMPD. Since he's taken control, he has done precious little to manage it, to oversee it, to reform it. And yet one wonders, why did you take control? Why did you want control over the police if you won't accept responsibility and you won't step up to the task of trying to make the improvements that anybody who's responsible for an organization should? But absolutely IMPD, where the need is clearly there. So, I mean, I can only say that the mayor asked for this job, and he is not doing it.
Do we need now a public safety director? Or should we look at other forms? I know New York has a police commissioner, and then under the commissioners, like chief of department, chief of this, chief of that. Chicago, I think, has is either a commissioner or it is the direct chief of police reports to the mayor. Los Angeles has a police commission between the mayor and LAPD. Do we need to look at something new? Because before, nobody knew or cared who the public safety director is. Right. Now, I think everybody in Indianapolis and Marion County says, you know, hey, we really need to have a serious community discussion about this.
We need to have that discussion, Amos. I agree. And make sure the Reverend understands, there's the men and women in blue that protects our lives and our families' lives every day. Most of them do an outstanding job. And nobody in council leadership have a problem with those men and women who are out there doing the job every day to protect us. So there's only a few bad officers, you know, and in every organization that happens. So we support those officers 100%. Got a problem with the FOP, but that's another thing. And then as far as running Straub out of town, we didn't run Straub out of town. We gave Straub, Dr. Straub, every opportunity to be successful. We had hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of conversation with Dr. Straub, trying to make sure that we get the public safety thing right. Now, in this time and date and time, the mayor says public safety is job number one. You know, that's, is that rhetoric or that what he truly believes? If he believes in leadership, he wrote a book about it. Let's see the mayor be the leader, step up, make public safety job number one, and let him be responsible for public safety. The other cities you name, their departments are five times as large as our department. Mm-hmm. So this is a small, in terms of public safety, compared to most major cities, you know, we have 1,600 police officers, 1,200 firefighters. They can report directly, the fire chief and police chief can report directly to the mayor. You know, so, and the mayor can be responsible, and he can make public safety job number one and cut out the middleman. Most people in the city can't name the last five public safety directors. I've been on 31 years in fire service. I know eight of them. You know what I mean? One of them was a grocery store clerk. I mean, a magnet. The other one was a medical doctor. You know, nobody even, they don't remember those guys. So it's time to look at that and have a conversation about whether you want to have a public safety director, whether we could streamline that process, save $500,000 in salaries from the public safety director's office, streamline communications and orders and process.
Is the council concerned? Obviously, the interim chief of police, Rick Height, is caught in a very difficult job trying to, you know, make sure he's got the confidence of his department, the confidence of the community. He was visible at the tragedy yesterday out of the apartment complex out on Allisonville Road, as a chief of police should be. But he still is not certified. He still is not street legal, to use the term, as a sworn police officer in Indiana. He's still got to take court. Is the council concerned that we got, like, technically two police chiefs because of this?
Well, Rick's not certified now, to our knowledge. So I don't think he can carry a gun or can make an arrest here in Indiana. And then if the mayor decides to continue hiring public safety directors, then the public safety director names the police and fire chief. So if a new director comes in, maybe Rick still won't be the police chief. So maybe we'll have another acting police chief and then another interim chief. So like I said, this process has to be streamlined. I think Rick's a fine law enforcement officer with a great background. And hopefully that he gets a certification and the mayor decides to keep him, because really it says the public safety director names them. That's just to give the mayor a little shield. Mm-hmm. The mayor says who the police chief is and who the fire chief is.
239-1310, 239-1310's after news. Name is Moore with your calls with the leadership of the City County Council. President Maggie Lewis, Vice President Brian Mayhern, Majority Leader Vernon Brown. Tomorrow we're live at Flanner House Charter Schools. Oh, in our second hour, there's an event, Indiana Black Expo wants the community to know. Plus, when you go to praiseindy.com, there's a new little logo on there that talks about Black Planet Radio. No, that's not the radio that one of those Avengers, one of those Marvel characters listens to. We'll find out all about what Black Planet – that's how you listen to me now. You've got to click on Black Planet Radio at praiseindy.com. It's Afternoons. We'll tell you all about it in the next hour. Afternoons with Amos after these. Gina Solomito is a 14-year-old, 8th grade student from here in Indianapolis. She is homeschooled. She is the only Indiana person left in the spelling bee. And she's in the finals, which I guess is tonight. Would somebody find out, is it on ESPN or ABC? Yeah. Because everybody likes to spell it, because they think, you know, it's like Aquila and the bee.
That's right.
And they like the part. Is it a word? Can you tell me the origin? What's the definition? Anyway, all that and more. Back to the phones at 239-1310 and Georgia. Hi there.
Hey, bro, Brown.
How you doing?
All right.
What's up?
And how's my city county council doing? All the members there.
Good.
Hey, look here. What I want to say is this. I don't know whether you city county council people can go get to the police academy, but it appears that they have nothing but white people out there. So I would think that it got to be some young blacks that can get into the police academy. I mean, something wrong with this picture. But anyway, I'll listen at the comment off the air.
Well, first of all, the commander of the police academy is African-American, Lloyd Crow. And I thought the last recruit class they just put in had a substantial number of African-Americans in the recruit class.
That's what they said.
Nobody's seen the recruit class?
I haven't seen it,
but that's what they said. But historically, you do this class of 30, 35 officers, and you have maybe 5 or 10% African-American if you have that.
All right, but the commander is. We need to get Lloyd in here with
Bob
whatever.
Turner used to be the commander of the police training academy a long time ago.
All right, 239-1310. Oh, the finals of the spelling bee tonight on ESPN. Back to the phones and Barbara. Hi there.
Yes, Amos. Good afternoon, and to your guests, the city county council. I have a question about trash pickup.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, first of all, are the subdivisions under the same rules as the rest of the city as far as the trash pickup running a day late if it falls on a holiday, if a holiday falls during that week? What has happened? I live in the Willows, and the last holiday, I think it was President's Day, and our trash was picked up on our regular trash pickup day, which is Wednesday. Well, that threw everybody off because this past holiday, Memorial Day, it was picked up today, which is Thursday. So I want to know, my question is, are the subdivisions and what have you are under the same rules as the city as far as the trash pickup?
They are, and I'll let the councilors respond. I believe President's Day is the one holiday where they don't do the one-day delay. Yes. They do the one-day delay for Dr. King, for Memorial Day, for the 4th of July, for Labor Day, for Thanksgiving, I think. And obviously Christmas and New Year's, but I don't think President's Day is that odd one that isn't. Councilor Lewis?
I think that's correct. But we all are on the same schedule. And if you ever have any questions regarding the schedule, it is posted on the IndyGov website. Also, if they forgot to pick up your trash, you can call the MAC line, 327-MAC.
Okay, well, they pick it up. It's just that there's some confusion about, you know, the holiday schedule.
Yes, ma'am, but we all are on the same schedule. I live in a subdivision as well, and we all are on the same schedule.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, you're quite welcome. Well, this just in from Channel 6, the official Spelling Bee station. Gina is out.
Oh.
Gina is out. She had to spell the word, oh, my Lord, bisbigliando. What? Bisbigli, don't ask me what that word is.
What does that mean? What is the origin?
What is the origin? But it is bisbigliando. Somebody look, find out what is that word. That sounds like something somebody just invented. That can't be a real world word, but she misspelled it, so she's out of the spelling bee in round 6. So nobody from Indiana made it, but to get that far is a great accomplishment. So congratulations to Sister Gina Solomito from Indianapolis. She just couldn't spell bisbigliando, and we'll find out exactly what in the world is that word. Back to the phones, and Robert, hi there.
How you doing, Amos? I'm just continuing what we talked about several days ago about
the Douglas Park Golf Course.
Time to really get into it. I want to take and put this to the council people that are there today. It is the responsibility of you all to have oversight over the ones that hold the contract to these golf courses. Now, I'm a golfer myself, and I'm angrier than a pit bull when you wake him up in the afternoon from his nap that about what is going on at Douglas Golf Course. Now, the contract holder that has the contract for Douglas has other courses, and out there at those courses, the pristine one, which is in a predominantly white area, they have cable TV in the clubhouse. They do not have cable in the clubhouse at Douglas, and this can be directly associated with the players like myself that will not buy season pass because the course is not in the appropriate condition, and the contract holder is retaliating, which I strongly believe that that is the act of a retaliation behind that. And also that we have chairs out there and tables, and they will not put the little complimentary Coca-Cola umbrellas out there. So we seniors can, after playing around, we'll sit down and relax.
I got that. Let me ask the leadership here. Shouldn't the same standards, if this vendor is operating Somme Golf Course on the north side, they're operating Whispering Pines on the southeast side, shouldn't the same amenities and the same standards hold with all three golf courses they have under their contract?
It all depends on the terms of the contract.
Okay.
I mean, they bid the golf courses on a group package the last time. Mm-hmm. So once they receive the bid and receive the contract, then they manage the courses according to the revenues that the courses bring in.
Right.
A lot of times a golf course management team will borrow money and to make certain improvements in the course, and that goes into consideration on their when they put their bids in for the courses. But we don't manage that. Once the contracts are awarded, you can complain to the Parks Department, which gives the contracts out because that's who assigns the contracts with the vendors. But right. The council has no oversight over that.
Should they?
It's so many golf courses. Most councils know so little about the golf courses. Once again, that's an expertise that should come under the Parks Department.
All right, and the Parks Board, which the council has appointments to.
Right.
Back to the phones and LaKeisha. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, Amos?
We're fine.
Hi. I had a question. I go to Ivy Tech, and I had took a loan out last semester. And they had said that they over-rewarded me too much loan money and that I had to pay back and I couldn't enroll in any of my classes until I start paying it back. And every time I go and ask the question, well, why do I have to pay that back if it's their mistake? How come they just didn't take the money out, you know, that they over-rewarded me? And can't nobody give me a straight answer. They always, like, send me to the financial aid office. Or
Wait a minute. What kind of loan was this? Was this a Pell Grant?
Yes, it was a Pell Grant loan.
This was a Pell Grant. And how much did they overpay you?
They said they overpaid me $578.22.
Did they?
That's what they're saying that they did, but they when the first time that they over rewarded me, the lady had took it out and I had saw it on my financial aid account.
Right.
And I had called them and she said that they had already
And does the money does this money come directly to you? The check is made out to you or is it made out to the school?
It goes to my Title I account. See what we got is
I understand the Title I account. Who draws on the account, you or the school?
The money comes out of the school. It goes to the school, and the school gives it to me.
So you did you take any of this $528.13 money yourself?
They didn't tell me until the last minute that they over-rewarded me.
I understand that, but if they over-rewarded you, did it go into your account? Did you get the money or the school got the money?
I got the money.
Oh, you did get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you cashed the check and deposited in your account, in your personal account?
It stayed on my card. Like the money, as soon as the school gets the money, they send it to my debit card. I have a debit card with the school.
And what'd you do with the money when it got to the debit card?
I used it.
Okay, but not for school purposes, correct?
Yes, for school purposes.
It doesn't matter. If you got custody of that money, you have to pay it back, even if it's their mistake. You have to pay it back. Even though it's their mistake, you had custody of the money, you should have noticed it was a mistake, you didn't, you have to pay it back.
Okay, but the thing, what I'm saying is, the first time that they over-rewarded me, the lady had took it out. Like, she knew how to go into the account and take it back out.
Okay.
Take it out, what she awarded. And the question was, how come they didn't take it out?
Well, it doesn't matter. The fact that they didn't catch it, you got it, you spent it, you got to pay it back. That's just the nature of the beast. Okay? 239-1310, 239-1310. Next meeting of the council is when?
June 4th, 7 p.m.
June 4th. What's coming up? Oh, speaking of that, the auditor found some extra money. She's willing to give the council this extra money to look at redistricting. I got two questions. The money that we already spent on the redistricting, the software, the computer, whatever, whose property is that since our tax money was spent?
David Brooks.
Why does he have custody of it? We spent it. Why does it not belong to the people of Indianapolis and Marion County?
Ryan Vine gave it to him. Ryan Vaught gave him $225,000 in a contract and software and proprietary rights and everything.
So if the auditor is willing to donate or transfer money from her budget to your budget, why would the mayor care?
Because it's partisan politics.
Oh, he's not partisan.
Petty partisan politics.
But I thought the mayor was not partisan.
We'll see.
Well, that may not be in his film that's coming up, but I think he's shown that there is some component there.
I want to see the mayor's movie. Again, president of the City County Council, Maggie Lewis, Vice President Brian Mayhern, Majority Leader Vernon Brown. Oh, the word, Bisbigliando, is a musical term that means very light and murmuring. It is used as a direction in music for a finger tremolo on the harp. So it's something harp players use if they want to play the harp very light and murmuring. They play it bisbigliando. See, we've learned something today.
Learn something new every day.
Learn something new every day. And I'm sure Jean is going to be homeschooled about that word when she comes back home. Guys, thanks very much. Coming up next.
Thank you.